We're about to have a conversation with Michelle Goldberg, who is an author, Slate columnist. Most recent piece that I found that she wrote, which really grabbed my attention, was The Smearing of Keith Ellison Reveals the Warped Priorities of the Israeli Lobby. And Michelle joins us now. Michelle, welcome. Good to have you with us on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This controversy really is really deep around Keith Ellison, deeper than I realized talking to a number of people. As one person, he was a fairly strong establishment figure and a very progressive liberal, said we don't need it would be dangerous for the future of the Democrats to have a Muslim as head of the DNC.
Which is infuriating, right? I mean, to me, that's the kind of crux of the argument against him to some extent, and shows the degree to which the Islamophobia that Donald Trump has ridden to power is becoming, I mean, one of the things that I think is going to happen over the next 4 years is that the center of political gravity will inevitably shift rightward, and we can do our best to keep pulling it back. But, you know, increasingly the kind of the central position will be, you know, not making giant cuts to Social Security, or not making, you know, or kind of not completely giving Israel a free hand to claim all of the West Bank, or do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so to me, it is so dangerous, I think, for Democrats to accept at face value or to kind of agree to play on the Republicans' terms in this way, you know, particularly when there's a moral issue at stake, which is the legitimization of religious bigotry, the legitimization of targeting, registering a religious minority.
Right. And that also plays into some weird juxtaposition going on here that you talk about in the article, which has to do with this time we're in where an anti-Semitic sentiment was pushed in some overt and covert ways, very deeply covert ways, in Trump's campaign around him, and the fact that his son-in-law is Jewish and Orthodox, pushing, but that's the reality. At the same time, we're pushing anti-Muslim rhetoric, and there's also this undercurrent of anti-Semitism that is boiling on the left and the right. I mean, and for Ellison to come out now and try to become the chair of DNC, and then he's being attacked because he's made certain statements about Palestine.
Well, first, I think we should be really clear about who Ellison is, right? I mean, Keith Ellison, it is true, as the Republicans are, you know, and some Democrats are seeking to remind us now, that he had, he worked with members of the Nation of Islam when he was in his 30s and refused to, you know, and should have acknowledged sooner than he did that the Nation of Islam and the Farrakhan are genuinely and kind of unambiguously anti-Semitic. And he has issued a really full-throated and complete apology for his failure to see that sooner to the Minnesota Jewish community, which by and large accepted it. You know, and he's kind of, you know, a lot of people in Minnesota Democratic and progressive politics are really eager to speak up for Keith Ellison. So that's one thing that has been taken up to smear him. And then the other thing that's been taken up to smear him has been his criticisms of Israel, which are relatively mild as far as criticisms of Israel go. He opposes the boycott, cessation, sanctions movement, which is, you know, kind of the cutting edge of pro-Palestinian activism. His stance on Israel is pretty much in line with liberal American Jews, right? I mean, J Street, the kind of pro-peace, pro-Israel group, has come out and said, you know, Ellison's views are our views. And so it is true that he's treated with an extra degree of suspicion because he's a Muslim airing these criticisms, and thus is, you know, kind of everything that he says and does is put under a microscope and treated with suspicion. But Keith Ellison is like a genuine progressive, which means that he's going to fight for the rights of Jewish people in this country, the rights of women in this country, the rights of gays and lesbians in this country. I mean, one of the reasons I was so heartened to see Keith Ellison put forward for DNC chair in the first place is because there's a really fierce divide on the left right now between between parts of the Sanders camp that say that Trump's election was a response to to economic anxiety and that Trump was able to kind of mobilize economic populism on his behalf, and that the Democratic Party needs to kind of abandon cultural liberalism and identity politics and be more the party of the working class, which is in many cases kind of the implicit meaning is the white working class. And then there are those of us among who I count myself who think that even though cultural pluralism and feminism and, you know, support for civil rights, even though that almost certainly did alienate huge parts of Trump's base, and that even though his election was a backlash to our values, the correct response to that is not to abandon the values of, you know, feminism and pluralism and diversity, but to strengthen them. And Keith Ellison is uniquely situated to bridge that divide, right? He was one of Sanders' earliest supporters among elected officials. He's somebody who kind of predicted Trump's possible win at a time when not a lot of other people were taking it seriously,
right.
You know, is very in line with the Sanders critique. But also because he's Black and because he's Muslim, you know, knows that his future, I think, you know, and his children's future in this country depends on this country, you know, kind of depends on the Obama coalition, right? And depends on pluralism and depends on, you know, that there are power struggles and battles that need to be fought that are not just about class. And so I think, you know, to me, although he's in some, you know, he's being treated as a very divisive figure because he alienates some pro-Israel groups, I actually think he could be a very unifying figure for most progressives.
So a couple of things here I want to explore with you from the article. One was how you began the article, and then I'm going to come back to something you just said about Keith Ellison and the Nation of Islam and the kind of real dichotomy there on some levels for some people, and talk a bit about that. But And I'm one of those folks, I'll just say up front, who's a fan of Keith Ellison. I think he's a brilliant guy and a very serious progressive and a sharp thinker who was not afraid to come out for Bernie Sanders very early. I mean, he's a really interesting guy, and I think he's a pretty stand-up human being as well. Having said all that, you started your piece out talking about Shahada Street in Hebron on the West Bank. And the famous tweet that was made that Keith Ellison sent out on the same street you walked down, seeing the same place where Orthodox Jews live that are protected by the Israeli army, and Palestinians who live on that street can't use the front door, as you wrote, and are forced to go down fire escapes to get out. And he put up this tweet with a photograph of caution, this was taken by Israel, you are now in apartheid.
And let's be clear, he didn't write that. He tweeted a photograph
that said that,
but
that's very powerful because, I mean, the Palestinian struggle for independence is catching the minds of many young people in America more than ever before. And Keith is a African-American Muslim, mm-hmm. tweets this out. You, as a Jewish thinker and a woman who supports Israel, was had the same kind of feeling when you walked down that street about what's going on there. So, I mean, this is...
Yeah, I mean...
Right?
So here's the difficult... One of the very difficult things about this whole debate is that if you've actually been to Hebron, it's very difficult within the kind of accepted terms of American political discourse about Israel to say, to describe what's going on there. It's so... When you're there, it's so dark and so horrifying that, I mean, I remember my first, I've been there twice, and the first time I went there, I had this feeling like, oh my God, now I'm going to be one of those people, like one of those bright-eyed cranks tries to explain in very hyperbolic language how terrible what's happening in Palestine is to other people who sort of roll their eyes and say, well, it must be more complicated than that. You know, and I feel like it's almost impossible to kind of bridge that gap with people who, you know, have a lot of the preconceptions that I had about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict before I actually started reporting in Palestine. And so you know, so part of what's happening is that Keith Ellison is being slammed for violating what's almost a sort of political correctness, which is that you don't use the A word, you know, even at one degree of remove. You don't use the word apartheid to describe what's going on in Israel, even if people who spend time in Hebron will often use that word. I also think it's worth pointing out that General Mattis, this a new Trump appointee, has also used that word to describe what's happening in Israel and Palestine. And somehow I haven't seen nearly the same degree of outrage about that.
Well, it's a different political equation there, though, right? In many ways. I think that when you look at that photographs like that and other things that are happening in Palestine, it energizes people like Keith Ellison, many people in the Jewish community, many other Americans who go, what's happening in Israel is wrong. And there are many people who are now beginning to lean towards the idea that what's happening to the Palestinians is tantamount to apartheid.
I think that that's true. And I think that that's true among a great deal of the Democratic, in particular, the kind of progressive grassroots. And they're going to increasingly... I think that the Jewish establishment, the mainstream Jewish groups, are not going to be able to stop people from coming to that conclusion simply by kind of demanding that people fall in line or demanding that people not talk about what's going on there. The only, you know, they're going to have to kind of take seriously what's going on there and, you know, kind of not insult people's intelligence about what's going on there.
So one of the things in the piece around Keith Ellison that you point out briefly in your piece is that the question about the Nation of Islam and Minister Louis Farrakhan. And that's also kind of a point of real confrontation, because there are more and more African-American activists and writers and thinkers and political leaders who are saying, here we go again. You're forcing another, like Obama with Jeremiah Wright, forcing another person to say, I disavow Farrakhan.
Wait, I'm sorry, but you know what? I actually think it's really, I mean, Jeremiah Wright is like a good man, and I think it's really wrong to compare Jeremiah Wright to Farrakhan.
What I'm saying is that there is a serious sensibility in the African-American community that says, how can you keep on, how you white people can keep on telling us who we should be aligned with? And that, you know, and given the struggle that goes on in this country. So that's another piece of this, I think, that is a tender hook.
I guess that's there, but I have to say this. I mean, you know, Louis Farrakhan, who is, let's be clear, an adamant, was a supporter of Donald Trump, really is an anti-Semite. And so if somebody wants to say, well, you know, who are you to tell me who I can and cannot work with? I guess that's true. I personally would have a very hard time supporting someone who still aligned themselves or collaborated with Louis Farrakhan. I don't have a hard time, you know, aligning myself with somebody who collaborated with him as a young man and has since repented of that collaboration.
Right. And I guess that there's a complexity here that is, I think, it's difficult to parse out sometimes.
The part of it is that it's easy for me to understand why why a young civil rights activist would be attracted to Louis Farrakhan, and why he would think that he was someone that he wanted to work with. But I do think that, personally, I'm not interested in kind of dancing. I think that he is someone who should be disavowed by people who, you know, expect to play a leadership role in the Democratic Party. And Keith Ellison has definitely done that.
So that's what I'm saying. What I'm getting to with this is, I think I can see this what's happened here is deepening this rift that we're seeing take place now from different ends. I mean, we're in a very complex moment politically.
Well, that's the thing. We're in a very complex moment politically when a lot of us, are under different degrees of real existential threat. And it is so upsetting to me to see kind of rather people rather than kind of trying to form a united front against the threat of Trump and Trumpism. You know, and Trump, let's be clear, although he has a Jewish son-in-law, a Jewish convert daughter, he's certainly a Zionist. I think some of the people around him have been very hostile to the place of Jews in America. And there's not necessarily a contradiction between being a very strong Zionist and an anti-Semite, as anybody who has ever gotten, you know, a message from an anti-Semite telling you, you know, make Aliyah or line up against the wall in Trump's America. Trump, you know, Steve Bannon, who's going to be a senior advisor, who's a senior advisor to Trump, Breitbart, his website, Breitbart News,
right,
wrote, kind of these glowing profiles of leaders of the alt-right, like Richard Spencer, who is best known now for giving that Hail Trump salute at a conference in D.C. after his election. You know, they have consistently glorified white nationalists. They've empowered anti-Semites. And we also know that Donald Trump, although he's very, very quick to disparage people who genuinely anger him, has never been moved to tweet about any of the people who are going around the country, including to the playground where I take my children, and, you know, celebrating his victory with swastikas. You know, people are graffitiing swastikas and go Trump, and, you know, have kind of turned Trump into a racist and anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim rallying cry. And so, you know, I think he's playing a double game, which is, you know, there's enough Jews around him to give him kind of plausible deniability. But he doesn't even, it's not even right to say that he dog whistles to anti-Semites, right? It's like, you know, wolf whistles, or, you know, he's kind of activated anti-Semitism as a galvanizing force in American politics, as it hasn't been before, you know, certainly in my lifetime, and probably not in, you know, in decades before that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michelle.
Oh, and so I was just going to say, it's insane to me that mainstream Jewish organizations, given the kind of amount of anti-Semitism that he has unearthed and legitimized, that they would be trying to smear Keith Ellison, an ally of Jewish people in America, at a time when there's a threat against Jews in America, the likes of which we've never seen before.
So let's say, for argument's sake, as we conclude, I mean, if Keith Ellison is denied the right to be chairman of the DNC, I mean, that sets up a huge divide for people who support Democrats.
I think it'll be really bad. I mean, I don't know that anybody has the right to be chairman of the DNC, but if he loses the election for DNC chairman, I think, you know, there's already a lot of ill will among progressives towards the Democratic Party and towards the DNC. And to some extent, I think that ill will and kind of lack of involvement and lack of mobilization, you know, helped lead us to the catastrophic path that we are now. And Keith Ellison will bring those people into the party, and he'll bring that energy into the party. And he might alienate some other people, and he might make some other people uncomfortable, but I think that he represents, you know, the future of the party. He represents the synthesis of the kind of Bernie Sanders swarm with the people who really care about, whose foremost commitments are to diversity and civil rights and pluralism and cosmopolitanism. And so, I think that if he is headed off, and it particularly because of a really baseless smear by organized Jewish groups, I think that will only end up intensifying the kind of disaffection for Israel among young progressives. And that's something that actually should scare these Jewish groups.
Well, I look forward to a really ongoing conversation about all this with you, Michelle Goldberg, as our things develops over the coming months, it looks like years, and see where this takes us. I deeply appreciate your writing and the work you do, and thank you so much for taking your time with us here today on The Mark Steiner Show.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.